You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
Yesterday, Julius Malema wanted a question answered. This is the question that he put to President Cyril Ramaphosa in Parliament. And it unfortunately did not result in a response that he was happy with. But this is what he said.
Now, Mr. President, I want to check, which law were you relying on when you paid these monies? Because the law that most of your people refer to is actually not that clear as to whether the state can pay for such offenses.
Okay, so he wanted to know how much money was being paid, particularly with all these legal cases of former president who obviously Zuma, who had been using what lawyers refer to and Karen has rightly sort of inscribed into the public space now, the Stalingrad approach, which basically means stalling, and the last man going, I concede, which cost us a lot of money as a country. But this is what a Cyril Ramaphosa had to say in response to that.
Now, Mr. President,
which law were you relying? Okay, that was the question, Abel. Can we not have the answer from President?
That it would be exciting on many people's minds that he must pay back the cost, but we have to wait until that case is finalized and a determination is made by court. We did it on the base of an agreement. Thank you very much.
Malema was mortally upset, and obviously, being a children, had all sorts of toys that he threw out of the cot, and this is what it sounded like, just for fun.
Speaker. No, you can't have two opportunities, Honorable Malema.
Not answered.
No, Honorable Malema, take your seat.
That's where we have a problem, because my question is not answered.
No, Honorable Malema.
I've written a question to the President about which policy was he following.
Honorable Malema, the President has responded to you.
No, he says to me,
he has told you that he has to check on that.
But this was a written question to him long before he came here.
Honorable Malema,
he should have checked before he comes here.
Take
now
your
he
seat.
Says to me,
take your seat, Honorable Malema.
When I've written a question to him, what is the purpose of writing a question?
Honorable Malema, take your seat.
But my question is...
let's shut down that children there. He is a children. Hey, I love it. Sometimes Malema behaves like the married man who has slimmed down, who's beautiful, who's got a wife, lives in the suburbs, just like the rest of us, and then he becomes the Malema of old. But here's the good news. For the next 50 minutes, Malema, we've got you covered. We're going to answer the question that Cyril didn't want to answer for you. So you can go back the next time you're in Parliament and the President is facing questions, and with the help of Karen Morn, legal journalist at TESO Blackstar and Checkpoint producer, as well as advocate Ben Winks, who's an independent advocate based in Joburg, specializes in con law and international law, we're going to arm you, Malema, so that you can know what the answer is to the question that you didn't get answered yesterday. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Oh, so great to be here. Thanks
it's
for
lovely
having,
having
us.
You. Thank you so much. And Ben?
Thanks for having me.
I would have you on every week. One of my favorite lawyers. Thanks so much for coming on as well. Now, I don't even know where we start with this one. Firstly, Ben has been involved trying to understand what the total quantum is in terms of what society has had to pay for Zuma for his myriad legal cases. And Karen has done exactly the same as well. There is a stunning article in this week's Financial Mail. We are doing the show, in a sense, in conjunction with Financial Mail. Please buy a copy and read her very fantastic write-up on this particular issue. She also wrote a piece for Times Life, but the more comprehensive one is in Financial Mail. One figure that has been bandied about over the last 48 hours is 15.3 million. What does that one refer to?
That is that was in response to the question from Malema. That's litigation costs since the 1st of May 2009. Now, in April 2009, of course, was when Mulcatedium Share made the decision to withdraw the Zuma prosecution. So the costs subsequent to that in terms of the personal legal fees of the president relate pretty much solely to the so-called spy tapes litigation. Remember that that case dragged on for 8 years. And remember the first step of that was the DA actually getting access to the spy tapes and then winning court orders and then Nongorbo Jiba refusing to hand over, and there was contempt of court and various judgments, and eventually they got the tapes, and then they bought the review application, I think in 2016. And then, of course, ultimately they got a successful ruling in that case with judge or, the judges in that matter saying, look, he should be prosecuted. I think it was Aubrey Ledwaba saying quite vociferously that he should be prosecuted for corruption. The president then took that on appeal in the Supreme Court of Appeal, and within the first 5 minutes, the NPA and the president conceded that, in fact, that they didn't have a case that they could defend, that the NPA had relied on the wrong section of law in order to justify that decision, and they conceded. So it was a completely unwinnable case from the get-go, and they pursued it for 8 long years at taxpayers' expense. So that's the money that was spent in relation to that.
So we paid, as a society, South Africa Inc., $15.3 million for a lawyer to stand up and say, we concede the other side's main point.
Well, you know what Ben has done, which is so fascinating, is, yes, you are right. But, I mean, he's looked at, for example, in Nkandla, where we had, you know, Jeremy Gauntlett pretty much doing the same thing on the issue of the remedial costs.
What did he do, Ben?
Well, the EFF and the DA had taken the president and parliament to court over their refusal to regard the public protectors in Nkandla report as binding. Mm. And the hearing, I think, was on a Tuesday. The previous Friday, on the advice of new counsel, Jeremy Gauntlett, who came in to lead the old favorite Kemp, Jake Kemp, who coined the phrase Stalingrad many years ago.
Yes.
Said, well, obviously, as a matter of constitutional law, an administrative action is binding unless it's been set aside by a court. So we have no basis for opposing this application. And tried to propose a settlement order which would have absolved the president of any kind of personal impeachable offense. The EFF weren't satisfied and said, no, we'll see you in court. We want an order saying that he's breached his oath of office, that he failed to comply with the Constitution. And that's what they got. The president's legal team, a very expensive legal team, essentially stood up to defend an unwinnable case and had very little to say.
And it cost us
$3.2 million
for 2 days, Boo.
How much?
$3.2 million.
For 2 days in court.
This is in response to Ben's power request.
And that's only for the president's own legal
team.
Remember,
they cost orders against them.
So who was in that team? So what, it was Gauntlett?
So there was Jeremy Gauntlett, Max Duplessis.
Okay, so but Jeremy was leading the team.
Mm.
Kemp J. Kemp, of course.
Yeah.
And Advocate Mahabia and a junior advocate, Sarah Puttifin-Jones.
Okay, so those five human beings for 2 days' work basically got how much?
$3.2 million in total. Well, there would have been. I've got the itemized bills.
He's got the files.
I'm in the wrong profession.
I know.
Tabisile, I hereby resign. I'm going to complete my LLB. What?
I think Gauntlett's fees, I think, were about 688.
I mean, I'm
not
Gauntlett, but
rand,
I mean, I'm not too stupid. Even just a fraction of that would be lekker.
Well, I mean, and also, I mean, Ben bought 19 applications under the Promotion of Access to Information Act in the wake of the whole state capture interdict situation, because he wanted to find out basically how much did all of this cost. And the president's attempt to block the release of Thuli Madonsela's report that one day in court where he spectacularly conceded and said, okay, well, no, I'm not going to interdict this.
I remember that, yeah.
R1 million taxpayer. And then remember that.
For how much work?
Well, I think that was a little. That was, yeah, R1.1 million for three counsel. And it was really for 1 day in court. There was a whole lot of correspondence flying around before that, but that was really done by the state attorney. And the opposing parties, the political parties, took issue with that as well, saying you can't use the state attorney's office for your own private
personal
litigation.
Personal interests, yeah.
You're being investigated.
$1.1 million to say, oh, yeah, no, you're right.
Well, what happened there and what the court...
It's unbelievable. I mean, we the three of us can use complicated legal jurisprudential language, but we got to name a thing for what it is.
And you know what?
Right? It's 1.1 million for BS, for conceding what is a legal truism, right? And I mean, I'm already doing what I don't want to do, which is to ascribe complexity where we need to be blunt, that this man was abusing the state coffers, and which is the other thing that you and I haven't yet spoken about, Karen. We also have to have a layered conversation here, because we also need to speak about the legal fees. I mean, you have the legal fraternity, or a small fraction of it, coining it.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the point. But it actually gets worse because it's not just about, you know, the funding of the president's litigation. Now that's 64 million.
What is that, Julie?
That was the amount spent according to the contingent liability section in financial statements for presidency, which Ben also looked at, which was spent by the president, you know, in terms of his legal fees. And, you know, he may make an argument, yeah, but not all of that was for personal litigation or costs related to his various, infractions. But in one instance, for example, I think in 2009, Scopa took issue because of 10.1 million that had been spent by presidency in that year, 9.6 had been spent in relation to the president's personal litigation. And it gets worse because actually the money spent by the presidency in relation to Zuma's own legal fees is but a drop in the ocean when we know that in all, pretty much all these cases, the presidency has been ordered to pay the costs of the parties, be it the EFF, the DA, whoever, CASAC, whatever, in
That's
bringing these cases.
That's
so
such a good point.
If you look at a situation of, you know, 32.4 million, 15.3, that's outside of potentially outside of the costs that have been ordered by the presidency that they've had to pay. So we don't, you know, we're kind of shooting in the dark here. And I think that there needs to be more specificity about where all this
money
went.
Okay, let's take a bit of a break here. I want us to step back. I'm going to ask my two guests, Karen and Ben, to turn into commerce students. In theory, how should we go about getting a total cost count so that we don't undercount how much Zuma has really got from you and me as taxpayers? We're going to do this on the other side of this, and then we'll get back to some of the issues, because there's so many cases here, and you and I live through the moment when there is a dramatic case on TV trying to stop a report from coming out. I've lost count. I was saying to Marva yesterday, all of these cases are muddled in my head, and this is as someone who's got a deep interest in legal journalism. So I'm very keen to know what the real probable cost is of what this man, and I'm sorry, but I can't describe him as anything else, has cost you and me. But let's take a bit of a break. I need what the Americans call a biology break. You can go shopping in the meantime, and we'll be back.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
Okay, Ben, let's step back a little bit here, right? If we, heaven forbid, had to play with Excel spreadsheets the whole day, in theory, what would be the total list of things that we're trying to add up to get to an understanding of the true financial cost of Zuma's legal Stalingrad strategy?
So ideally, what we want and what I requested over a year ago is the invoices, the fee notes, that, you know, that will give us all of the answers we're looking for. And those things ought to be readily ascertainable. The state attorney's office has to keep these things documented. Nobody could have been paid. Hulley and Associates could not have been paid. Kemp J. Kemp could not have been paid unless they produced an invoice.
Mm.
So if we have all of those, then we can easily determine the cost. And it's astonishing to me that particularly where the presidency now takes the position that, no, well, the agreement that was struck 12 years ago was that Zuma will pay everything back if he loses. Well, how are you not keeping track of the bill? If you plan to recover it from him, then surely you must be keeping track of the bill.
Yeah.
So it should be readily ascertainable. For some reason, it's not.
And I think there's a distinct danger here because the president's pursued a lot of kind of litigation framed in kind of a civil context in pursuit of an attack on a criminal case. So, for example, the challenges on the warrants of search and seizure on his property and his, you know, his lawyer's property, the challenge to the mutual legal assistance request to Mauritius to get those 12 documents, including the encrypted facts that were so important in the corruption case against him. You know, this, you know, the application that led to the Nicholson ruling about him not being allowed to make representations, which ultimately, you know, resulted in that Mbeki decision that somehow Mbeki had intervened in the prosecution. All of those are kind of, you know, are those going to also form basis? Are those also going to be included in those costs? Because, you know, those alone are around over 17 million rand. So we are already looking at that bill. Plus, we've got this the state capture decision, which gave a personal cost order against the president, which the UDM is estimating at around 10 million rand. So, you know, he's looking at a liability here of 27 million rand, plus, you know, the very distinct possibility that if Sean Abrahams makes the decision that we're all expecting him to make and says Jacob Zuma will go on trial in, you know, KZN or wherever it is, he is going to do what he's always done, and he's going to seek a review of that decision. He will challenge the racketeering charge, and then he will bring a permanent stay of prosecution. We know this from, you know, what the correspondence that we've seen. And that's all going to be state funded, Eusebius, before a single witness has even opened their mouth. And what guarantees do you have that in the very, you know, distinct, in the very strong possibility that indeed there is a conviction here, you're going to get that money back? We have no guarantees.
Look, the public is gobsmacked. Well, my guests are brilliant. They're bringing you the facts. And like I said, if you have just switched off because you are getting a migraine, get a copy of the Financial Mail. There's a lovely piece there by Karen explaining all of this stuff. It sounds to me as if, although the 15.3 million is enough to make one nauseous, and the 64 million amount that's bandied about, Ben, that the true total cost could likely be hundreds of millions. And at the very least, what we can say with some certainty while waiting for the proper paper trail that you are asking of the state, and rightly so, is that the 64 million is obviously, in the best case scenario, a conservative estimate. It's not the true cost.
I think it's fair to say that, yeah. It's also important, I think, what the EFF is also including in their estimates. There are two branches, perhaps, to this Stalingrad litigation that's been such a prominent feature of the Zuma presidency and campaign for the presidency. Is there's the corruption charges. And there were many court cases related to the corruption charges, and that all came to an end with the Supreme Court of Appeal saying Nicholson was wrong, he must stand trial. So that was sort of Stalingrad 1 from 2005 to 2009. Then once the president assumes office, there's a second phase of litigation where there's untrammeled access to public funds. This is now outside the scope of the deal struck with the president, the former president. This is now unbridled access to the presidency's own budget and adjusted budget when they need more money from Treasury to pursue fruitless litigation, to oppose cases when there are no prospects of success in opposition. And the EFF has alluded to some of these. One is state capture. Another is Nkandla. There's the appointment of Menzi Simelane. Yeah. There is a range of cases about interference in the National Prosecuting Authority. And all of those put together, where you have not only the presidency being ordered to pay costs, but in more recent cases like Nkandla and state capture, the presidency actually offering to pay the costs of the other side on a punitive scale. Because he says, oh, yes, I realize I had no legal prospects of success.
And those, from an accounting point of view, Karen, that's what you alluded to just now, is part of the undercounting that we should be wary of, that could make the total cost to the country much higher.
Well, it's also, in accounting terms, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And how do you justify litigating on the basis that he did? How do you justify it? And remember that the civil cases that were brought, be it Nkandla, be it the state capture, even the Nkosana matter, where, you know, Nkosana's allegation was that the president was terrified that he was going to charge him and thus offered him this money to just go away. They're all about the president's personal interests. The state capture report directly implicated him, his son, and his friends, the Gupta family, in whole-scale capture of the state, and basically said that he had, you know, essentially given his executive discretion to choose ministers to a family.
Okay, so on the, I mean, I, like I said, I'm just absolutely gobsmacked by these amounts. I know you are. I can see from my Twitter feed. We're going to take a break. Orally standing by with the news headlines. On the other side of this, Karen is going to tell you what the court had said in one instance about Zuma's strategy, so that you can get an understanding of the dim view that the judiciary takes off this Stalingrad approach. And then I'm also very curious, and I'm sure you are, it now makes me wonder, what about things like even the rape trial? What about when he got pissed off with Zapiro, for example? I wonder how much more we paid for that perhaps we're not aware of. If you want to know the answers, do stay with us. It's half.
Eusebius Mkhize on your number one news and talk station.
Okay, so obviously President Jacob Zuma kept running to court, trying all sorts of tactics, and then at the last minute, as you've heard my guest explain, will suddenly throw in the legal towel, by which point you have lawyers that have made millions, sometimes making 2-3 million over 2-3 days, and then splitting that not equitably between the 4 or 5 people in the team, from the junior to Jeremy. And this is what the court said in one of these cases. Lambo had the following to say. I'm just taking one little quote, and then I'm going to ask Karen to explain this. And the court said the following. In our view, the president had no justifiable basis to simply ignore the impact of state capture corruption on the SA public. His conduct also falls far short of the expectation on him as head of state to support institutions of democracy, such as the public protector. This is, and here's the key bit, a proper case where a personal costs order is justified and should be granted. The court then went further. And this is also a bit that Karen has done very good journalistic work to try and get the public to understand. There's a broader pattern on the president's conduct in litigation of defending what ultimately turns out on the president's own concession to have been the indefensible all along, banking on any advantage that the passage of time may bring. This pattern has played out in well-publicized cases in the courts and would be naive to ignore. We refer here particularly to the Nkandla case and the spy tapes case. Karen, discuss 20 marks.
Well, I mean, what was interesting was that, of course, was the second quote comes from the court's ruling in the Nkosana Golden Handshake case. And that came a few days before the state capture ruling and the costs, personal costs orders against the president. And it was really, you know, it was really kind of a fascinating judicial pronouncement on a pathology which I think has infuriated the average South African for quite some time, that you just litigate on cases that you then concede, actually, are indefensible. I didn't have a winnable case here, with a complete disregard for the kind of time and effort that is wasted in defending the indefensible, but also the costs. And we cannot walk away from the fact that this was the president of the country. He is the first citizen. He is the person that is supposed to manifest and protect the interests of all of us and show the kind of leadership and accountability that inspires all of us to work and function in an equitable society. When he is using state funds at great expense with seemingly little to no accountability of how that money is spent to defend his own interests, and then at the last minute saying, oh, no, I'm just going to take taxpayers' money and I'll offer the legal costs to the EFF and whatever, and we can all just walk away nicely.
Yeah.
That is not acceptable.
So when a personal cost order is made, firstly, is that routine that presidents experience it? And secondly, Ben, in addition to that, what is the court trying to signal when it does that?
Well, it's not routine for any official, let alone a president.
Okay.
I mean, there was much contestation in the Constitutional Court about whether Batabile Dlamini should pay a personal costs order for the atrocious handling of the payment of social grants, the tender for the payment of social grants. And it's not something that a court will grant lightly, because officials are, you know, for all purposes, doing their jobs. They may do it poorly in some cases, but they
and we allow for them to make even reasonable errors.
Absolutely.
While wearing their hats.
It is only where a court is so outraged by unreasonable or
vexatious. I mean, this is the
or
kind
abusive
of
behavior that they would make this kind of order,
okay,
as in the words that they use, as a mark of the court's displeasure.
Okay. Some of the other cases that we've almost forgotten about, and either one of you can help me out here, who paid for those? Like when when he gets pissed off with Zapiro, for example, or even like going way back even to the rape case, did he pay for those kinds of cases himself?
Well, Ben was actually directly involved in that. So this
So I was part of the legal team that represented the media defendants in seven of those defamation cases.
Okay.
And in the one
did we end up paying for you?
I don't know. I'm trying to, get to the bottom of that because they're the only one that got to the court steps of trial was the Rape of Justice cartoon. And the president ultimately was compelled to – we pressed him to withdraw and to offer our costs. Ultimately, over a weekend, what was settled on was 50% of our costs. Now,
and what was the bill? $3.2 million for 2 days?
To be honest, I can't remember.
he's like, I saw all over the place. I don't know.
Unfortunately,
I thought he was one of the good ones, Karen.
Well, I was a lowly candidate attorney at the time, so unfortunately, I wouldn't have seen any of the spoils.
You wouldn't have got a slice of that
pie. Who saw them, Dario?
I'll have to check with Dario whether it factored into a promotion or a bonus of anyone in the team. But the difficulty there is that generally in defamation litigation, in any kind of civil litigation, parties are compelled to settle reasonably and to avoid going to court because trial costs money. You know, it's days in court with senior counsel leading witnesses and cross-examining witnesses. So it's in both parties' interest, regardless of who's right and who's wrong, to settle before it goes to trial.
Yeah.
Now, in that case, the president didn't seem to have that inhibition. What he wanted to avoid was the media spectacle of this going to trial.
Billy Downer was going to testify. It would have been a show that you would have sold tickets to.
And there was a surprising willingness to let costs accumulate.
So who were the president's lawyers in that matter?
So his lawyers changed a number of times. But okay. when we were on the steps of trial, the representatives at a pretrial conference before Deputy Judge President Mojapelo let slip that the funding or that the litigation was being funded in the president's official capacity.
Mm.
In not so many words, this is what was let slip. And that's what planted this suspicion in my mind.
Plainly put, we do not know how much the president paid his own legal team when he was cheesed off with Zapiro. But we do know that, again, my tax money went into that.
It seems that it was. You know, my understanding is that was indeed the case, but we have to find out the money involved.
This man was truly rapacious.
Eusebius McKaiser on 702 and Cape Talk.
This will be a full discussion on another occasion, Ben, but we have to go there for the sake of just thematic completeness. How are fees structured by you lawyers? Do you wake up and you go, aha, we can get $3.2 million in 2 days or whatever the case might be. Yes! We're even prepared to take on a case that is unwinnable.
Well,
be honest.
Lawyers charge what the market will pay them. So if someone is in particular demand, then they'll be able to charge more. So a partner at a big five law firm will charge
about $5,000. So what happens to that module that all of you sheepishly go through in your LLBs called Ethics for Lawyers?
Well, this is the issue, is that the courts have tried to encourage in as firm a manner as they can reasonable charging of fees. But the bottom line is that the government can set a tariff and the rules board can set tariffs for what you can recover from the other party as reasonable expenses if you win a costs order. But the private arrangement between a private person and his lawyer, if he wants the best and is prepared to pay a premium, the government doesn't interfere with that. There may be competition issues that the Competition Commission has looked at over the years. But now, when you're dealing not with a private litigant, but with the state, there are different considerations at play. When the state is spending our money, it's supposed to spend that money within a framework that ensures value for money, and that ensures that there is a competitive, transparent, cost-effective use of resources.
No, I get that. I get that. And in this case, the state fell short. Zuma was taking the piss. I mean, it's very clear.
Well, this is
but I'm trying to put the spotlight just for two minutes, but I'm going to do it for an hour in a future conversation. Mm. How do you – I mean, if you are Jeremy Gauntlet, do you not even ask whether you are being – asked to solicit a bid as part of a competitive process? What about the ethical duty that falls on you? Or do you just say, cool, here's an easy windfall. I know that the public protector's report, in fact, should not be challenged. But hey, one day in court, I can stand up, concede the argument. And what was that staggering amount, Karen? 2 days, 3 million?
3.2 million.
3.2 million. Like, what about the duty that falls on lawyers?
Well, yeah.
I'm not saying they shouldn't make a living.
So as a matter of our law of ethics, lawyers have their first duty, their primary duty is to the court, not to their client. We're officers of the court. So you have a duty not to mislead the court primarily, but also in my view of things, there's an obligation not to waste the court's time, not to abuse judicial process, certainly. And where there have been abuses of judicial process, then lawyers themselves have even been punished with costs orders. Now, where there's an unwinnable case or an unwinnable appeal or a meritless opposition to a claim by, you know, a child whose mother has been killed as a result of police negligence or police positive conduct, for the state to fight that and to spend more money on the lawyer than the amount
the
being claimed, there is now an ethical obligation on the lawyer to say no.
I want to take a break there. In the 12 minutes remaining, we're going to do two things. We're going to talk about the opportunity costs of this staggering amount of money. And we've got some fantastic example here. Ben gave an example off air of Nkandla, the legal bill versus the final amount that the man had to pay back. And then it puts it all in perspective. And then, of course, that horrible case where a young South African needlessly died an undignified death. And the state was putting up a fight for small amounts of compensation, and then you compare that to what has been going on inside the presidency, and you get a sense of just how gross the years under Zuma's watch had been.
CBS Makaiza on your number one news and talk station.
Okay, we've only got 6 minutes left with my two guests. Let's try and thresh out a couple more issues. Karen, it is really, like, it grates me to know that sometimes the amount of money that was spent on the legal bill completely exceeds what could have been spent on simply doing the right thing.
That's exactly the point, is that, you know, the former president's pathology was always being forced to do what he was constitutionally required to do from the very beginning, and to be treated as a normal citizen, you know, equal before the law, face the consequences of his own alleged actions, and also take responsibility for his own role, for instance, in not obeying the remedial action of the public protector, in not responding to the onus on him to investigate very serious allegations of corruption that were eating like cancer at the soul of the country. These were things that were really, you know, within his mandate as a so-called responsible leader to address.
How much did he eventually pay back in terms of Nkandla?
Well, I mean, the cost was seven million.
Yeah, I think it was.
And what is the legal bill?
The legal bill...
We don't know yet. So
just for his lawyers was 3.2, but remember there are other parties. And if
the DA,
lawyers,
the EFF, the public protector...
If they cost the same, then it would have been 9.6 for them plus the 3.2.
So it is
like
very likely that the amount that was...
Was spent, absolutely. I think you can say that with certainty.
Well, and not only
that... Shocking. That is wasteful.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's irrational.
So the definition
right, because
of waste...
It's irrational even inside the headspace of a thief. Because even if your objective is simply to get away with as much thieving as possible,
there's been
wasteful expenditure in the making of a thieving end.
That's a good point, because now the what's underlying the pathology of this kind of Stalingrad litigation is that the point of each of these skirmishes is not to win.
It's to delay.
The point is to delay.
Delay, 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 delay.
And the classic example is the one for which he was so... harshly condemned by the full bench.
And that's why I love that clause so much in the judgment. Banking on any advantage that the passage of time may bring.
And you see, the tragedy of the Stalingrad approach is it's perpetuated very often by the very same government against the poorest of the poor, who are litigating.
Well, let's go there, Kevin, because Karen, because that's exactly the last thing I wanted us to touch on.
Because
if you contrast it, not just the Michael Komapep case, but also Life is the Many, we all watched recently how the state was desperate to try and prevent constitutional damages from being awarded, for example. So when the little person rightly wants justice and compensation for the state messing up, suddenly they remember that they need to be hygienic with the money in the coffers.
Yeah, exactly. And what was so horrific with Life is a Dimeni was the amounts that I think Barbara Creasy revealed had been spent on legal fees. I think it was in the region of like 50 million. It was a crazy, crazy amount. And people were found with paper in their stomachs, in their bodies when they did the autopsies because they were so starving that they ate the files in the room. How is that okay? You know, and the other thing to remember is we don't have a punitive legal system. When a poor person is subjected to the horror of state negligence, whether it's Life is a Dimeni, whether it's Michael Komape drowning in human feces at age 5 in a pit latrine, their lives, the way our damages systems works is that if you are poor, your life is valued according to the legal system as worth less. So I've done cases where a young man gets shot in the back by a police officer in Hillbrow and his family have to produce the receipts for the 20 rand that he gave them on a Saturday once, and they get paid 145,000 rand in damages.
On top of that, Ben, no one wants to put any monetary value on the loss of a family life. And yet the state has the audacity in the Michael Komape case of trying to imply along the way that there's some family members who are trying to capitalize on the death of a little kid that fell into a pit latrine. So we see this very callous attitude towards any cost conversation where it is the state versus a citizen.
Poor person.
And yet when it is the state trying to defend its own rubbish in terms of subverting the constitution, then there's a bottomless pit of money.
It's a disgraceful paradox. This approach, this kind of two-faced approach to what the courts are supposed to do. And what the Life is a Dimeni example is an important one because there you don't have taxed bills of costs, where it's, you know, you can stand back and look and say, the money should have just been spent on, the people in need. I mean, if we look, for example, at the Marikana inquiry, which lasted many years, and the state capture inquiry is coming up as well, the money that was spent on state lawyers, the police's lawyers, the Minister of Minerals and Energy, the Deputy President, all of their lawyers in the Marikana inquiry is astronomical. We don't even have those figures, but you just look at the days spent in hearings by senior counsel. The families, I mean, if you'd given them the option, do you want some kind of tortured truth that we can extract from these people after many months and even years of this formal process, or can we just give you the money? I have no doubt that they would ask for something material, something that can actually improve
Karen,
their lives.
We only have 20 seconds left. Tell us how we will, where to from here with the story. We want, obviously, the most accurate overall economic cost of the legal bill. Ben is working on it. You're working on it. Where does it move to next as a story?
Well, Ben is still waiting for responses to many of his PIA requests, which are outstanding. I think he's only got 2 at this stage. But the big question for me is the costs order against the president in state capture and this issue of whether the DA is going to litigate to force the president to pay back the money, because the 10 million alone is a very serious bill for him to face.
Absolutely. Love your journalism. Love your lawyerly work. Thanks so much, Ben, for coming in. Much appreciated. Karen, thanks as always.